About 30 years ago, Grants Pass rejoiced in being named a Tree City, USA. Other cities in the region followed, recognized for their cultivation and care of trees around town. So with that recognition in mind, it might have produced a few double takes when a few Rogue Valley cities announced that they'd been named Bee City, USA. Bee as in buzz. In general, the cities have been recognized for being friendly places for bees. Ashland hosts a conference called Pesticides, People, Pollinators, and the Planet tomorrow at Southern Oregon University. Big on alliteration. Our next guest will attend. She is Phyllis Stiles, the executive director of Bee City USA, who has traveled from far to attend the conference. Phyllis, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Nice to be here.
Tell us about Bee City USA and how the whole idea first cropped up.
Well, back in 2011, I was an active member of my bee club in Asheville, North Carolina. And, you know, we were hearing horrible, horrible news every day about the decline of the honeybee. And as a beekeeper, you know, we talked about it an awful lot. And I got concerned about it and thought, heck, I'm not getting any younger. Maybe I can do something about this. And I'd worked in nonprofits my whole life, managed programs, various roles with nonprofits. And so I went to my bee club and I said, hey, would somebody like to help me invent this thing called Bee City USA?
Had you heard of Tree City USA? Was it part of a riff on that?
It was exactly a riff on Tree City USA, and we used it as a model. They were very inspirational for us because we thought, well, if American cities can become more conscious about their tree canopies and understand how important that canopy is to living in cities and just the planet in general, maybe people in American cities can be more conscientious. We call it PC, pollinator conscious. about the importance of pollinators.
It seems like Oregon hit a tipping point a few years ago with the massive bee die-off in a bunch of linden trees in the greater Portland area. I'm sure you heard about this.
Absolutely.
Caused by neonicotinoid. We're talking 30,000, 50,000 dead bees in one place.
Bumblebees,
and then something else like that happened not terribly long after that. So certainly there's the focus on the West Coast, but it sounds like that tipping point of knowledge seems to be in other places in the country as well, including where you are in North Carolina.
It's a great thing. You know, back in 2013, Time magazine had a picture of a dead bee, and it said, imagine a world without bees. And the interest in not only honeybees, but all the pollinators, particularly the bee genera, because there are 20,000 species of bees in the world that are not honeybees. And the honeybee is actually a colonist. They came with the colonists from Europe to this hemisphere back in the 1600s. So we already had 4,000 species of bees doing the work of pollination, along with lots of other species like butterflies and moths and the usual suspects. So, the interest has really, really picked up, and we can thank the honeybee and the monarch butterfly for that. They've really brought the issue of what's happening with the pollinators to the forefront.
What are the major threats that they face? I mean, obviously the use of pesticides is one, but there are other issues facing both the monarch and bees as well, right?
Absolutely. And with the monarch butterfly, the story is on their host plant. The milkweed plant is essential for the monarch butterfly to lay her egg on a milkweed plant and for that caterpillar to munch on those leaves that they've co-evolved with just in a particular way. And so that's the only plant a mother monarch will lay her eggs on. So that brings out the idea of specialization between plants and animals that's so important when you start talking about pollinators. And with the bees, not only is it the habitat issue of where they can forage for food, because that's, you know, part of it with the monarch, but also the issue of parasitic mites. That's huge in the honeybee world, but also in the bumblebee world. And diseases are sadly getting passed on the flowers that all those different pollinators are visiting.
So the bugs can, I'm calling them bugs, I mean germs or what, you know, whatever it is, the pathogen can stay on the area where the pollinators work.
That's right. Yeah. So they're all sharing the same diseases in some cases, but, you know, some insects are susceptible to some that others are not. And so poor nutrition, when you talk about monocropping, you know, we think of great big fields of corn and soy and stuff like that. But you got to think about your lawn in your yard or on your campus or, you know, any kind of a development. A lawn is a monocrop. And so for the pollinators, those are food deserts.
Oh, really? So there's nothing there for them to get interested in? And
nothing at all, unless the nice landowner allows some clover to grow or some dandelions to grow, some weeds. Then there's some food there for the pollinators.
All right. So it sounds like those are the sorts of things that make for Bee City USA. Phyllis Stiles is the executive director of Bee City USA and our guest on The Exchange. You're welcome to join in the conversation at 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Was there a time you considered making this sort of like Pollinator City USA, so it was broader than just bees, or was it always a bee focus?
That's a great question, Jeff. We had a steering committee, and we grappled with all those kind of questions. And if you look at our logo, you'll see that it is a bumblebee. It's not a honeybee on our logo. We were trying to grab people's attention, and most people love honeybees. And if you ask a little kid to draw a bee, they'll draw a bumblebee, but they'll call it a honeybee. Mm-hmm. So you have to start with what people know. And so since there was so much attention on particularly honeybees, but bees in general, we consider them a gateway pollinator.
A gateway into bigger and better pollinators.
That's
as you go
right.
On. So for the folks who don't know, the difference between bumble and honeybee is what?
Well, interestingly enough, when you look at the bee kingdom, there are two major groups that are actually colonists, and that's the honeybee and the bumblebee. They're both colonizers, and bumblebees nest in the ground. Bees nest in trees or cavities someplace. But the rest of the bees are solitary bees. They're not social bees. They just have one mother, and she lays a few eggs, and that's the end of the story.
Bumble and honeybees.
Oh, the difference between bumble and honeybees. Well, we love bumblebees because they're these big, fuzzy, fat-looking things that people used to say had no reason to fly. Scientifically, mm-hmm. You couldn't prove why a bumblebee should be able to fly. Later on, science proved that it was very possible for them to fly, as they were showing every day. So that was just kind of a funny myth that was going around. But yeah, they're bigger, they're heavier, and they have the magic of doing a thing called buzz pollination. It's another name for it is sonication. They can vibrate their wing muscles and make certain plants that really hold back on their pollen release that pollen, like eggplants and tomatoes and I think blueberries, another one. Numerous plants require buzz pollination. The other thing about bumblebees is that they get up earlier in the morning. They can withstand cold better than honeybees. So they're very, very different in the way their physiology works, but also the way they operate in the world of flowers.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing, buzz pollination. It's like they're designed for synchronicity with the plants that they pollinate.
Ooh, you nailed it right there. And it took millions of years to get that synchronicity. And you have a great example here with the lupin. The lupin will only let a bumblebee pollinate it. The other kind of bees can't get inside to the pollen.
Huh. No other pollinators need apply.
There you go. And there are quite a few species of bumblebees, actually.
All right. So what then makes for a Bee City USA? What are the attributes you're looking for, and how many things have communities had to add to get onto the list?
Mm-hmm. Well, we ask cities to apply, to fill out our application, and for their city councils to adopt a resolution. So it's not an award for what you've already done. It's a recognition that you've made a commitment to do more and more and more every year. And so each city that makes that commitment agrees that they are going to hold at least one annual awareness event about the importance of pollinators and what we can do to help them. And all of our cities are doing much more than one awareness event, but that's a minimum. And they put up the signage so that the public is aware that they've made this commitment to be pollinator conscious, to be pollinator friendly. And so the public will hold them accountable once they announce that. And they have to reapply every year and get recertified every year. And in that process, they have to give us an annual report telling us all the things that they did the year before. So in the resolution that they adopt, it talks about planting more native plants. It talks about using fewer pesticides. And raising consciousness in their communities. Those are the three biggies. And so what we're witnessing is that in each city, every year they're doing more and more, and they're talking about their pesticide policies in their community.
Are you proponents of any particular approach, like integrated pest management, IPM, that sort of thing?
Exactly. And there's a little add-on. We call it least toxic integrated pest management. That's what we hope that the cities will move towards.
So the list is not terribly long thus far. The one I got off your website yesterday is 15 cities long, mm-hmm. of which I noticed that three are all right next to each other in the Rogue Valley. So it makes sense that that you're here visiting the Rogue Valley because you got Ashland, Talent, and Phoenix all on the list.
Right.
Any particular reason for the bursts of activity that seems like that are happening here and in North Carolina is where you're from?
Yes, the burst of activity here is named Dolly Warden. She is in Talent, and she really wanted Talent to be the second BCDUSA in the country, and she started talking to her neighbors and community leaders and made it her business for that to happen, and she is a force to behold.
And she's the companion who brought you in here today?
She, along with Christina Lefevre, sitting here, and the person behind the conference that's coming up on this Saturday.
Phyllis Stiles is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Executive Director of Bee City USA. Your stories about successful operations with bees or questions about things that might have gone wrong. Welcome here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, interestingly enough, the conference you're talking about, the pesticides, people, pollinators, and the planet. Whew, use up all your peas for the day. starting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University. Now, SOU, I understand, is the first bee campus in the Bee City program. Is that right?
There you go. This is a hot spot, huh? And Mike Oxendine and Jamie Hickner and others from SOU contacted me and said they would like to be the first Bee Campus USA. It was on our strategic plan to do that, to move into campuses, but we hadn't planned to do it so quickly. But they were so committed to the idea and offered great suggestions and agreed to help us map out what the certification process would include. And they went on to get an award from the Association of Sustainability in Higher Education and attract a lot more universities to the program because of their leadership. And so now we have 8 campuses with another one just about to be certified and inquiries coming in from across the country and outside the country.
So how can people who care enough to want to be part of the Bee City movement, or at least want to be part of protecting pollinators, take part and at the same time stay within their comfort zone? Because I'm talking about in my lifetime going from it seemed like everybody knew reacting a bee to now everybody loves pollinators. But, you know, there's still some people who are afraid of bees and
sure.
don't particularly want them around, at least in large numbers. So how do you advocate them finding that zone where they can have some plants that make their property stop being flyover land and become a place where bees want to hang out? But not perhaps in huge clumps.
Uh-huh. Well, the comforting thing for people that are afraid of being stung is that solitary bees, which are the vast majority of bees in the world, don't sting. They have stingers, but they're not meant for mammals. And so you don't have to worry about any bees except a bumblebee and a honeybee if that's your worry. But anybody that wants to support all the pollinators, whether it's butterflies, moths, bees, beetles, bats, flies are in many cases pollinators, certain flies, and many wasps are important pollinators, hummingbirds, just plant a wide variety of native plants. And it doesn't have to be a flowering plant, because many of the host plants for the butterflies and the caterpillars are not flowering plants.
Milkweed in particular doesn't have flowers, does it?
No, milkweed does have flowers, yeah. And many of the other pollinators enjoy the nectar and pollen from milkweed. So it is a fantastic choice to put in your yard. And you'll have a ball watching the monarch caterpillars on that milkweed plant. So, yeah, just plant native plants, and you're doing a great service to the planet.
And it sounds like in most places you can probably check with your local extension service and get an idea of what the native plants are. And certainly nurseries, too, would have some idea of what the native plants are.
Yeah, especially the native nurseries. Lots of nurseries have a great mixture of plants, some of which are native and some of which aren't. But they are a wonderful resource for education.
The growth of Bee City USA, is it about what you expected? I mean, you got 15 cities so far, and I imagine you got applications for probably as many sitting on your desk. I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
many more.
I mean, we just got an application from, get this, Beeville, Texas.
They'd have to be
in Bee County. Isn't that wonderful? We get them from all over the country. We have one coming in from Alaska. So, it's exciting. I mean, we're in conversations with about 60 cities right now and are going to be announcing three in the next 2 weeks.
All right. Rebecca and Eugene sent an email. She writes that people should be told that the bees that will sting fairly unprovoked are wasps and hornets. Honeybees sting when you disturb their nest. So that sounds like the best thing.
Well, and what she's getting at is social insects. So wasps and hornets, if they live socially, if they're not solitary, because there's both. And that's true of the bees, too. If they live in a nest and you provoke them at their nest, they're protecting all their young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you might get stung. But if they're out and about just looking for food, it's very rare that even a social insect will sting you. They're being defensive when they sting you.
So have an awareness of where the nests are before you start plunging into the brush and doing that. And of course, this time of year, too, when the flowers are out there, I always warn people not to sniff without first checking to make sure there's not an occupant
on
that
good
flower.
Advice. Yeah. That's good advice. But let's just make that distinction between yellow jackets and bees. Yellow jackets are wasps, and they do some pollination work, and many wasps are very important pollinators, and they're beneficial insects because they actually eat the insects that are pests.
All right. Phyllis Stiles is the executive director of Bee City USA. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right.